Hello, everybody. My name is Louise Eddington. I am the Cosmic Owl and Wisdom Weaver of Cosmic Owl Astrology. There's my owl. And I am here today to talk to you about the once every 13, 14 years, 14 usually, Jupiter-Uranus conjunction. And this one is coming up in Taurus. Excuse my Mercury retrograde, Mercury ruling my Gemini moon, stumbles. But anyway, the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction. First of all, I kind of want to say a few things before I dive in. Every 14 years this happens, and it happens in different signs, usually at every point. Usually when astrologers look at these conjunctions, they look at history, they look at what happened in that period when these conjunctions happened, and they we research going on kind of what happened before, not to predict, but just to look at the type of things that can happen. However, I have to say that I have kind of one big bugbear. Is that often when we look back, we as astrologers, I'm not calling it any one person out, we don't look at the whole picture of the chart at that time. And I say that now because we're going to look back at the last Jupiter-Uranus conjunctions in Taurus. We also don't look at where we are in our collective transformation, evolution, shift, whatever you want to call it. And we are undoubtedly in a major shift right now that is bigger than the last conjunctions. So that's my little kind of talk beforehand. I also, and it's beginning to kind of get on my nerves as an astrologer, there's also a lot of fear porn. I don't know whether it's to get clicks or likes or whether astrologers generally bring their own fear in. But that not just about this Jupiter-Uranus conjunction, but the fact that this Jupiter-Uranus conjunction is happening with this major Aries eclipse. I'm recording this on the 5th of April before I fly off to see the eclipse. We've also got a Mercury retrograde and Jupiter, Mars and Saturn meeting in Pisces. I've done videos on all of this. And there's a lot of like, whoa, and this and that. And, you know, I personally think we as astrologers have to change, because it's all very well kind of saying things could be challenging, but to say, oh, I don't like this at all, this is a terrible thing, this is like whatever, I kind of think this is instilling fear in the collective. So why not look at these things with a sense of possibility? Because I really speak to you personally. I'm not speaking to the collective events over which we have little control in the moment. So let me dive in. So I'm going to look at charts, of course, as I do. And I'm actually going to start by looking backwards at the last two Jupiter-Uranus conjunctions in the sign of Taurus. And they don't happen very often. So we're going back, first of all, to 1858. So I'm going to probably add some highlights as we go along. So this Jupiter-Uranus conjunction was, wow, this was right at the anaretic degree of Taurus, which kind of made it very intense anyway on it in its own right. If we look at the aspects, this was in a sextile to Sedna, which is great cycles of change. Neptune was also in Pisces back then, And like now, they are speaking to each other a little bit, and we are definitely in a time of chaos and rebirth and confusion. So there's that. And I'm going to talk about what these conjunctions mean in general as well. This one was also in an Earth trine to Centaur Pholus, who is the Pandora's box centaur, who was also in Capricorn at the same time. But what planets were in Taurus with Jupiter and Uranus? Well, Mercury was there, Pluto was there, bringing some great transformation as well. And this is Centaur Cariclo. We are not, where's the notes? This was not happening in eclipse season. Okay, so this one's happening in eclipse season. But let's look at a little bit at what changes this eclipse brought. So in history, the first comet to be photographed was in this year, 1858. Charles Darwin actually completed his Origin of the Species, his theory of evolution, which I believe has not been debunked, but people are saying, you know, the timelines and things, there's questioning, we've learned new information. So, you know, we're developing more on that. We had the first vision of the Virgin Mary under all of this in Lourdes in France. And Abraham Lincoln back then delivered a House Divided speech, which kind of feels very relevant to where we are right now, right? You get the idea. However, let's go. I just want to go a little deeper into 1858. So the conjunction in 1858 was on May the 23rd. Often the notion of this energy is there's often a lot arrives kind of around the date itself, or something emerges during that time, because Jupiter and Uranus is Uranus is often sudden and radical change. However, we don't always know about it till later. I will say that. So, if we look at 1858, sorry, events. Oh, why is it not letting me do that? Events. Oh, excuse me. I just keep. Oh, there we go. Not all. In May, there was a war of reform in Mexico. So that's a very Jupiter Uranus word, by the way, reform. So we'll see that. Why am I only in May? Oh, there we go. That would be why. I'll go back. As we led into it, as we led into May, I want to give you some of the timeline for some of this. I don't have dates for all of it. But we had some inventions too. Oh, I did write them down. Here we go. Sorry about this. So we had some inventions too. So February the 11th was the Virgin Mary vision at Lourdes. March the 23rd, as we're leading up to the Jupiter Uranus conjunction, the streetcar was patented. On March the 30th, the pencil with an eraser was patented. And that's really kind of interesting, because I think with often with patents, you don't always kind of, they're not, that's claiming the patent, then they get manufactured, then they kind of bring the change. May the 8th, almost on the Jupiter Uranus conjunction in 1858, abolitionist John Brown's body lies a mouldering in his grave, held a constitutional convention in Canada, which was a secret one, an anti-slavery convention with Harriet Tubman. So that was kept well hidden till later as well. And then July the 1st was the reading of Darwin's evolution papers, and June the 2nd was the first comet photographs. So you could see that it was all very close to where the time of the conjunction. Now let's move to 1941. And I gave all my preamble about this because in 1941, most of you will know that we were in the middle of war. We were in the middle of World War II. It had started in 1939 and did not end until 1945. So, you know, because a lot of people are looking back at 1941, there's a lot of fear about war. And, you know, we are in very volatile times as well. However, I want to say, look at this. The Jupiter-Uranus conjunction then was at 25 degrees. Whoops. But it was conjunct Venus. And the Venus and the Sun are very conjunct, so are very close. So I just want to look what star point we were under. Mercury was there. Saturn was there. Sun was there. Black Moon Lilith. Hygieia. Nessus. Trauma and generational traumas, things like that, you know, was kind of unleashed under all of this. But look at this Taurus stellium. We were not in eclipse season, but the eclipses were in Libra. Sorry, the nodes were in Libra and Aries, but they were about to leave. And the south node was in Aries at this time. Mars was in Aquarius, Pholus was in Capricorn again. So that's happened both times. But this is just very different. Now you go, Taurus. Taurus isn't really associated with war, is it? So I'm just going to stop the share so you don't get wrapped up in all of that. But to look at the date of that conjunction in 1941, and I've got a lot to say about this. I'm going to look at the events in a minute. That was on May the 7th, 1941, which would have been my mother's birthday if she was alive then. She was not. Or was she? Actually, she was. She was born. Okay, so that would have been on her birthday. We had a Venus star point. Just emerging at 28 Aries 50. And we are finishing the Venus star points in Aries at the end of this decade. So, you know, this was the start of a Mars ruled star point. The first one was actually back in... So we're very in the very early days, at least. The star point came in 1929. And, you know, we've been under Aries and Scorpio star points for quite a long time, since those late 1920s. And they're Mars ruled star points. So back to the 1941 again. And I'm going to talk about some things that happened. So in 1941, January the 6th, FDR gave his Four Freedoms speeches. Sorry, that was in 1941. I read it wrong. January the 9th, there was a pogrom of where 6,000 Jews were murdered. That was in Romania. But May the 9th, 2 days after, and remember, we were already at war. May the 9th, 2 days after the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction, the German spy codes were broken. Also, almost to the day of the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction, the Blitz over London, the Blitzkrieg, literally means lightning war. It ended on May the 11th after those codes were broken. So this was a huge turning point in the war, with Bletchley Park in the UK having found out the German spy codes. I'm sure they didn't announce it on the news, but they broke the codes so they could listen in to what the Germans and the Nazis were doing. Okay, that was a turning point in the war. The Blitzkrieg ending, lightning war on London literally ended right on this Jupiter-Uranus conjunction. Now, Hitler did turn his attention to invade Soviet Union, not Britain at that point, but it was still a turning point in the war because I think he was realizing that his luck, you know, it was not going to work. Now, in October, the atomic program was approved. So that's, you know, new discoveries, new inventions, and that led to the Manhattan Project, of course, which led to the atomic bomb, which, you know, did bring an end to the war, but also, well, if you haven't watched Oppenheimer, you'll have the whole story. No opinion on that. You know, it's kind of like, what do? You know, this war has to come to an end. It's, but anyway, it was awful either way, an awful choice. And December the 7th of 1941 was the Pearl Harbor attack, but that led to the US entering World War II, which would have gone another direction if the US had not joined the Allies and in the World War II. I'm very aware of this history because growing up in the UK, we are steeped in World War II history. But you might go, if you go and read your own history of 1941, you will also find that's the year the camps were developed, you know, the concentration camps. To my mind, that is the presence of Saturn in Taurus as well. Saturn came up to Uranus later in 1941. Saturn is confinement. Saturn is, you know, in Taurus sign, which is confinement of people and bodies, if you like. Venus in Aries, more new morning star. Venus is literal kind of bodies, if you like. And the news started to kind of change and leak out about things like that. There's a lot more we could say about that. Also, you know, just look at all this energy in Taurus. Confinement, but breakthroughs, turning points, but lasting. Saturn, you know, is time. And the war lasted another good 4.5 years after this. So, but there were breakthroughs that brought change and turning points. All right. Now we go to 2024. And actually, I'm going to stop and stop the share a little bit before we look at this one. And I'm not going to read the whole book because, oh my God, it's so hard to read. It's a fabulous, fabulous book by Richard Tarnas, Cosmos and Psyche. But boy, does he use flowery language, and he's very intellectual. So it's really kind of takes some digging through. So I'm just gonna kind of read a few highlights. He did have, this book really is a whole big research project of cycles of change of outer planets. So there's a whole big chapter on Jupiter and Uranus. So I want to read you his quote from the start of his chapter that he calls Cycles of Creativity and Expansion. There are a thousand paths that have never yet trodden. Humanity and humanity's earth are still unexhausted and undiscovered. Watch and listen, you solitaries. From the future come winds with a stealthy flapping of wings, and good tidings go out to delicate ears. And that's from Nietzsche, Thus Spoke Zarathustra. Now then, I'm basically going to read the titles of his chapters in this book. Opening New Horizons, okay? Liberality, Providence, Plenitude, Elevation, Ascendancy, and the tendency to experience growth and progress, success, honor, good fortune, abundance, aggrandizement, prodigality, excess, and inflation. Okay, so a lot of that's to do with Jupiter. It also has a frequent association with the realm and aspirations of culture, especially high culture. High principle, higher learning, breadth of knowledge, liberal education, cultured erudition, and a wide and encompassing vision. In general, it seems to impel a movement towards encompassing greater wholes and enlarging one's world, embracing higher principles of order, higher orders of magnitude, broader horizons of experience. So this is when they come into alignment. All of these tendencies interact in a very vivid manner, he says, with the principle we have seen associated with the planet Uranus, creative breakthrough, rebellion against constraints and status quo, the impulse for freedom, and the new sudden openings and awakenings, a tendency to constellate the unexpected and disruptive, and so forth. And creative brilliance. Excitement of experience suddenly expanding horizons. He says in world transits, the cyclical alignments of Jupiter and Uranus can correlate consistently with condensed waves of celebrated milestones of creative or emancipatory activity across many fields. And so that's why I think we need to look at the whole chart. So one, the next chapter is convergence of science, scientific breakthroughs. I'm not going to go into all of his details, but we can see that with like breaking the codes, for example, the nuclear research that led to the bomb, but also led to some other things on that have been more useful. Social and political rebellions and awakenings are often associated with it. That doesn't always mean violence as well, because it's social and political, right? Okay, it depends on the chart. He also said quantum leaps and peak experiences. And he actually, in his book, correlates huge leaps forward in particularly quantum theory and quantum mechanics, pretty much every time we have a Jupiter-Uranus conjunction. And I've kind of been talking about that a lot myself. And that's what the CERN Hadron Collider is bringing. So I love that they are starting up the collider during the eclipse and during this Jupiter-Uranus conjunction. Thanks very much. I think they could make some really helpful discoveries. So he says from Copernicus to Darwin, that's kind of discoveries about where we came from, which is also to do with that. Music and literature, we've just seen Beyoncé's Cowboy Carter burst onto the horizons, okay? And everybody's raving about it. Everybody who I know, well, not everybody. There's a lot of hate as well. Everybody I know is raving about it. Most people agree that it's a kind of like a masterpiece. It says so much. It's kind of breakthrough. It's genre bending, mixing, just so much to it. So that's music and literature. Also, Taylor Swift's new album, Tortured Poets Society, is being released the day before this conjunction on April the 19th. I'm sure she has an astrologer or knows astrology. So, yay. So, you know, these are two women that are very connected to the Leo Venus star point that I talked about from last August the 13th, 2023. So, a lot of what's going to come up and come out and burst out has been building since then, and I'll talk about that as well. I think that's kind of was that all his doo, doo, doo. Oh, I did want to say that in the cycle, the 18 was it 1850? Gosh, I'm kind of like, where am I? Yes, in the 1858 cycle, Alice in Wonderland was actually published, I think. Lewis Carroll published in the cycle, not on the date, But Lewis Carroll published Alice's Adventures in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass. And interestingly, the book I'm writing, The Soul's Tea Party, is very Alice in Wonderlandish, and it's suddenly I've actually started writing it now. I can it that I'm writing two books, book on series as well. Iconic moments and cultural land milestones, he says. That's another thing. A bit like the women overtaking the Grammys. I'm going to look. Anyway, there's big breakthroughs. I think that's his. God, it's his so long. He also says hidden verse. So that's, as I mentioned, sometimes, we don't know about things like this until later. He said, oh, duh. No one during the Jupiter-Uranus opposition in 1976 knew that two young men in a garage in California had begun the personal computer revolution. And no one in the following Jupiter-Uranus conjunction in 1983 recognized that perestroika was being born when Mikhail Gorbachev made his crucial visit to Canada. And began the change over in the Soviet Union. So anyway, you get the idea. I actually watched a YouTube with Richard Tarnas, and I couldn't find it again. If you search his name on YouTube and look at recent ones, it was a look ahead, I think, at 2024. He's excited about this Jupiter-Uranus conjunction. I'm really excited about it. I'm really excited about the eclipse, and I urge you not to step into fear. And even, the presence of Saturn and Mars conjunct in Pisces, I think is also even a good one. And so, when are we going to put overall? It's good. It depends on how conscious you are and how you live in the world and things like that. But overall, I think we are in a big turning point. Remember, I said Jupiter-Uranus turning points in many things. So here is the chart for 2024 conjunction. And so in Taurus, here we have Jupiter and Uranus. The Sun just entered, and it's at 21 degrees. But it's in square to that Leo star point, which I did a video about saying, of talking about Beyonce, Taylor Swift, Miley Cyrus, few others whose star rose under this star. And this star is about to set at the end of April, but this is kind of the last of the Leo morning star for this time. Okay. And Jupiter and Uranus are squaring that star point from last August the 13th. So things are bursting out of the gate. That began back under this star point and have been building. All right. Everybody's so excited about Beyonce's album, and I am. I'm low-key obsessed, and I walk to it. But I talked about her in my Venus retrograde class when we looked at this star point, and talked about how her renaissance meant rebirth, and this eclipse means rebirth too. It's at the resurrection degree of Aries. It's in the Leo decan, so it's double sun kind of, and sun rules Leo. Oh, there's so much positivity going on here, and I'm sorry for the fear. Even the Mars-Saturn conjunction, when are we going to stop using these terms, malefic? Mars and Saturn are not the only planets that bring war, pain, death, all things like that. Jupiter, if you look at death charts, is often associated with death, with somebody dying. Venus as morning star is associated with war. The sign of Libra is war and peace. every planet and every sign has its higher and lower energies, and we have to look at the bigger thing. Yes, I would say that Mars and Saturn are bringing a lot of water events as we approach it. It's on the 10th, you've already got that video, especially combined with earthquakey kind of energy of eclipses and things like that. It's a very heightened time. But, you know, thank the Lord that we had this huge eclipse in Taiwan and 9 people died. It could have been way, way worse. I'm sorry for those 9 people. And, you know, we had the Mars-Saturn conjunction applying with that bridge, the boat going into the bridge and unfortunately, again, killing some people, but raising the empathy. Gaza and Israel, there's a turning point in the language being used around that. I'm not going to get into who's right or who's wrong, not being political, but there is a shift. And we have not even had this conjunction yet. It's on April the 20th. So looking at aspects to this, well, and look at this in Taurus, we have no Saturn. We don't have Venus. We don't have Mercury. The sun is just moved in, but is not that close. And, you know, the sun did rule this Leo star point from August the 13th last year. So that's a positive. Venus as morning star is at the eclipse degree on it, 19 degrees of Aries, still conjunct Chiron, saying, hey, you know, we can bring in some healing here. You know, this is huge. And you know, this is really in a semi-sextile to the eclipse. So it's like they're speaking to each other. Breakthroughs, new beginnings, bursts of like, I've got this, I know who I am, I'm going to move forward energetically, I'm starting these new things, I feel like I've woken up from this lifelong slumber. I could, yeah, I'll wax lyrical. Jupiter and Uranus are also in a square to Cariclo, the grace spinner, spinner of grace, helping us to spin a new story in the sign of Aquarius, where she is pretty much opposing that Venus star point. So that's a nice T-square fixed about, you know, we are going to start fixing into place and manifesting what we've been working towards. It's also in a square to Hecate, the triple moon goddess, moving us more into that interconnectedness of mind, body, and spirit, with healing energy. It's in a semi-sextile to Chiron, so more healing there. We just have to keep making some adjustments. You know, all of this is ongoing. Conjunction is also in a lovely supportive sextile to the spiritual warrior, Mars in Pisces. Mars is more like fight for something in Pisces. Fight for the collective good. It's not the angry attacking Mars as much, though there are some frustrations for those that are not tuned into these energies. Okay. Lastly, Jupiter and Uranus, is in a trine to Ceres, the great mother, who that's a nice earth trine, creating, making things real and bringing things up. So all in all, this, I think, is going to bring some rapid and earth-changing discoveries, probably around clean energy, also around values and our senses, mind, body, spirit, you know, hearing, sight, taste, smell, touch. So there's going to be more discoveries about our senses, but also our values. But more importantly, I think there could be something around clean energy coming from all of this. You know, there could be with the aspect to Mars, especially with Mars coming up to Neptune and being even further softened, the rise in compassion and people going, we can't carry on like this anymore, is getting more and more and more. But what about, you know, them, you say, these authoritarians? I think their star is fading. I think by the end of the decade, we're only 6 years away. I know it seems a long time. I think, you know, their star will have fallen. I think it's going to start to fall as the Leo star point disappears. Officially, Venus will disappear from view as morning star on April the 28th. On June the 4th, we're going to have a Gemini star coming in, and I'm doing a webinar on that. If you want to know the details, it's always on my Substack. You'll see it come up. I'm charging for that because I'm going to be giving a lot of information, but you will get the recording. But this, I just see this as magical, healing, breakthroughs, new discoveries, this new music that's empowering people. What did somebody say to me about it in my writing group? Somebody was like, it's like, you know, we used to get an album and we'd listen to it from all the way through. I haven't done that for years, and I've done that with this album several times. I expect I'm going to do it with Tortured Poets. Music is often the voice of our times. It's bringing change in music about, and women as well rising up. Anyway, to make you feel even better about what's coming from this month, even if it seems chaotic and challenging at times, you know, it is. It's a challenging time and chaotic, and you know, some people are affected by the weather more than others and all of that. Actually, I'm going to read the Chandra symbols first. Let me just have a drink. I'm thirsty. Okay, the Omega symbol by John Sandbach in his Blogspot blog. Taurus 22, we always go up. A man drinking a tonic that, or a human, let's say, drinking a tonic that causes rainbow colours to spread throughout his body or their body. And I have to tell you, I'm feeling this. I feel like creative. I feel driven. I feel full of life. I feel inspired. I've gone down in sizes, just like almost magically. Now I am doing the work, and I do, you know, tune into the energies daily to guide me, which is why I write every day so that you can do too. But anyway, this is, I'll read it again. A human drinking a tonic that causes rainbow colors to spread throughout their body. We are being woken up in such big ways. He says that this is a whole degree is about passion and expiation of errors, which means getting rid of them. He says you allow experiences to affect you deeply. This helps you to understand them, and through this to resolve or overcome challenges. The problem is this process can take time, and before it's complete can be confusing. You are not one to take the easy way out and should never try to. You are always willing to move forward even when you know the way could be difficult. The Chandra symbol this degree is, and before I read it, I just want to say, I quoted Lynn Bell, astrologer, for the eclipse in my Substack blog for April the 5th, but I'm going to read it here too. She said, eclipses carry the symbolism of blinding and a return to clear seeing. They plunge us into darkness, but the light returns. Okay. And on that note, I'll read you the Chandra symbol, but I also do want to look at one other thing. I just have a kind of feeling there's something else going on this month too that I might need to mention. So bear with me one second. Okay, I've got the link. So I'll put that in a second. But the Chandra symbol is a blindfolded woman who sees the future. Remember what I said about eclipses being temporarily blinded? Both of these degrees emphasize inwardness. The Omega symbol signifies the ability to both heal and nurture the self. That's the rainbows, right? The Chandra symbol, the ability to tune out the outer world so that the direction in which energy is moving can be felt. The Chandra symbol may allude to the lack or weakness of one type of sense of perception that is made up for by the person having another sense of perceptiveness. This person does not see what others see, and hence their insights can be of great value because they offer a new direction and perspective on experience. The Omega symbol shows the ability for this degree to know what it needs, and if these instincts are listened to and followed, the ability to find a means to meet those needs. And if you can't feel it yourself, find somebody who can. You know, I feel like I am here as this message of possibility and hope. I'm not the only one. There are a few of us. I would be careful who you listen to in this time because the energies are full of hope and possibility. And having somebody who's got the fear and goes, but this is not a great idea, but what if? And oh, this happened before, or something like that. We're in a new reality here. So, sorry. I think astrology and other things, you know, tarot, things like that, people who do things like me have to acknowledge that we are in this new reality. So, anyway, the Sabian symbol after my preaching. And again, don't forget to, you know, subscribe, thumbs up, all those kind of things. And love to those who give me thumbs down. Need hugs. White dove over troubled waters, Sabian symbol. How beautiful is that? James Burgess says nature will always produce some symbolic expression of the currently important messages for those who can read the signs. And then he says it's about reading the mysterious symbols in nature. By contrast to books, there are sometimes signs. These arise out of larger life rhythms and are more indicative of the greater picture. The cultural vibration as contrasted to the individual. So we are better advised to seek guidance from the signs all around us rather than simply consulting our own wisdom. So this is like about weaving together all of these things, which is what I am trying to do in this wisdom weaving kind of energy. It's not necessarily my wisdom. I'm weaving the wisdom I see and what's coming at me and what I read and pulling it all together. And I am not the only one who is doing that. I do want to read Dane Rudyard's version of White Dove Flying Over Troubled Waters. He said the spiritual inspiration that comes to the individual in the overcoming of crisis, which is a crossroads, which we've been at. He says here also we are confronted with a symbol of guidance, and the dove flying over troubled waters reminds one of the story of Noah and the ark. Don't know if it did me, but anyway, Noah met his and mankind's crisis courageously and in complete obedience to the promptings of Source, let's say. The test completed, he received the dove's message. It is a message from the Holy Spirit announcing a new dispensation. This symbolic scene can be applied to personal crises resulting from emotional upheavals or from the eruption of unconscious forces and impulses into the consciousness. if the crisis has been faced in the right spirit. And he said that this is a product of the rhythm of cosmic cycles that reveals its conclusive beat through a living and concretely significant sign, which is a reward to the faithful. How often do I have to say, look, please don't go into the fear of eclipses. If you are lucky enough like me to be going under the totality, whether it's cloudy or not, I don't know if it's going to be. Either way, I'm going to lay my we are going to try and find a place as far away from people as possible, going on back roads. We've learned to do that from two other eclipses. I'm going to lay my blanket, my picnic blanket on the ground while my husband takes his pictures. I am going to lie there first with my eclipse glasses on. Then when in totality for 4 minutes, 28 seconds, whether it's cloudy or not, I'm going to soak up the eclipse energy because it's a rebirth, it's a renaissance. And then under this Jupiter-Uranus conjunction to share the chart again, this is how you tune in, by the way. Okay, this is how you kind of, I need to find the chart again. Oh, there it is. That's why I couldn't find it. You tune in by getting outside and feeling it and then doing the work and listening to the messages and the symbols and the signs or reading those that can interpret them until you can tune in on your own. But I'm still listening to other people too, and other people listen to me. And it's, yeah, anyway, this is the conjunction here. On the East Coast, it's April the 20th, 10:27 p.m. So it'll be April the 21st for a lot of you. If you're in the UK or Australia or New Zealand or anywhere else that's west of the East Coast of the USA, it's probably going to be on April the 21st. And you get it on the 21st at 21 degrees, but we get it on the 20th at square the star point that was 20 degrees. This is on my Uranus, by the way, and I've had my Uranus square. I just had the third exact pass yesterday. So no wonder it's speaking to me. And this is the time on the East Coast. So for me, it would be 8:27 p.m. here in Utah, 7:27 Pacific. Just put yourself under the energy wherever you are. Whether you're not if you're not under the path of the eclipse, just tune in at the eclipse time because you are still under that energy. This is an awesome month. But it's also kind of crazy and chaotic and challenging. You know, I'm still dealing with the insurance claims and things like that, but it's just stuff. Embrace possibility, embrace potential, embrace the awe of all of this coming together at one time. And I would not be surprised if some real awe-inspiring just moments happen for you. In that note, I am going to share a poem underneath in the description from somebody who's in my writing collective. I shared it somewhere yesterday. Where did I share it? I can't remember, but I'm going to share the link to her Substack of that poem in the description with this podcast. And it's about awe and wonder. And I want you to read that poem, copy it, print it, share it everywhere. She deserves her sharing. Follow her Substack blog so you can get more of her poetry because it's perfect for this moment. So, I love you all. Or should I read the poem for you? You're probably all gone by now. You're probably like, she's going on and on and on. Sorry. I feel like I'm going to read it. Okay, so I'm going to go to my home page. and go and view my site and go to my notes to get to it, because I shared it on her notes, on my notes. I feel like I have to read it, actually. Her Substack's called Wonder and Awe, a throwing pot, sorry, her Substack is. But her name's Lucinda Bowen. She wrote it yesterday. Of the two, Wonder is more polite. Wonder wells, expanding my breath, a private feeling I can manage if I'm fast enough to cover my mouth, or blasts through the top of my head, opens my skull and shoots out like a geezer, as subtle as Old Faithful. When awe arrives, my whole body becomes a conduit. I am the volcano, and awe is the fire hose of sulfuric heat, a flaming sword of lava spewed from the throat. Awe turns my skin molten and hot, discharges shame like a bullet, leaves me smouldering, spent. Awe doesn't care if I'm driving or in church. Once on a whale watch, a humpback breached and awe erupted. I fell to my knees on the deck of the boat. And I'm going to cry. Blind and breathless, split in half. I will spend the rest of my life cleaved by that moment, one side smooth and polished, the other an edge, sharp and raw. Was I bitten in half, or did I become the fang? No matter how solid a footing you think you've found, awe is the knowing that beneath us, that sometimes there are whales who launch like rockets through the skin of one world and into the next. Awe is a physical intrusion, truth manifested as salt spray, deep, briny, marine, the crash and groan as the atmosphere makes room for miracle, jubilance, other, for the impossibility of a giant in flight. That boat ride was 20 years ago, and still every time I think of it, my edges sparkle like glass. Well, I think we're in for some moments like that, that are going to take us to our knees in awe. And it's going to stick with us. It's going to change our lives. I feel it already. Sorry to get tearful, but you know, I am having my Uranus square. And Neptune's also square my ascendant. So, and they're all speaking to each other, all of these planets. Oh, and the eclipse is making a fire grand trine with my Uranus and my Sun and aspecting my Chiron. Expect awe. Look at the world with awe. Look, open your eyes and wait to be awed. Okay. This is a major, major time of change, and we are going to be okay. I love you.